From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 17th day of August 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will join us too. He'll check out the cash grain situation. He's with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. At the end of our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. Mike Tenora will be here from T-Storm. I'll ask him about something that's been rumbling through the industry for about a month or so as it relates to the cool weather in this month and what that might mean for the month of September as it relates to cold weather, frost and freezes. And we'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, thanks for being with us, Dan. Hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing just fine, Todd.
I hear you are down near the Rio Grande and it's kind of hot.
Yes, it is. It's pushing right up against 100 for the last couple of days. Guys have, they're picking cotton. Saw a lot of cotton bales on the way down, and there's still some cotton fields yet. They'll go back and probably pick them again. The corn's all gone. It's been gone for a while. So they're just finishing up on their cotton picking right now.
What do you think of the marketplace today and how it has reacted since we talked last week after the USDA numbers? It was kind of a nice little jump in the beans.
Yeah, the beans continue to find support from the demand side of the equation. Demand seems to be fairly stout. We had another good weekly export sales of new crop beans, and then we had an additional sales announcements this morning here of beans. Also, the beans, I think the trade is still somewhat concerned that parts of Iowa have not maybe picked up enough rain over the past week or two, and that overall yields might not be quite as stout as what the trade was trading here a week ago. So that's where soybeans are at. I think old crop soybeans are pretty well probably cleaned up and out of farmer hands. Whereas when you go on the flip side, you look at corn. For the most part, the corn crop is made. All we're doing now is arguing about yield, whether or not it's at trend line. We're, 2 bushels below trend line or 5 bushels below trend line. Weather doesn't seem to have much of an impact on corn anymore, other than that the weather forecasts are generally benign and non-threatening. So that's kind of negative. I think we probably still have some old crop corn that farmers still own that are peddling out. This is kind of what happened to them last year. As we closed in on toward the end of August, they had to either re-up on new storage or peel out their old crop inventory. I think we're seeing some of that pressure. And there's really nothing else to talk about. Sales were okay. Export sales were okay here today. Probably a little disappointing in the wheat. Wheat's making new lows, new contract year lows. Corn has come now, I think, within a nickel or 6 cents of its contract low on December. Now, soybeans are still, the November 17 soybean chart is still in a broad base, long-term sideways to higher trend, but it's coming down toward that trend line up. Whether or not that will hold or not, I guess we'll see how the weather plays out over the next couple weeks. And then we begin to hear the yield reports coming out of the field.
I know you'll be looking mostly at the December contract for the corn, but in the September, it's down at 350. That's something of a psychological level. And if you look back at the charts, the next drop down is, I don't know, I suppose 20 cents to 330 or thereabouts. And really, the question is not about where it's headed, but whether we can round out a bottom sometime before we get into harvest, in your opinion, and where we stand in some of the weekly cycles.
Well, my weekly cyclical work would indicate that we would, that we are in the process of trying to find some kind of 50-week cycle low in here. whether it's it kind of ranges anywhere between 45 and 55 weeks. But the timing on that kind of implies that it's more likely to be closer to the first of the month rather than now, but you never know. My cyclical work would say that probably by the time we get through Labor Day and start looking at the September crop report, the corn market could be on the upswing, and that does a couple things. That gets rid of the old crop. Either the producer has had to re-up and pay the additional storage, or he's peeled it out by then. And I think that's kind of where we're at. We probably have farmers with a lot of basis contracts on the September futures contract. Again, that they're going to have to either roll that to the December contract or peel out of it. And I think that's where the market's got the pressure on the corn market, because, you know, if you look at the Twitter wire, you continue to hear crop tour reports and all that, that the yield is, it at least doesn't seem to be up to par to what USDA gave us here a week ago. But as you know, as well as I know, we got a lot of time to adjust that yield. I think next week's Farm Journal, I guess, tour now, it's called Farm Journal Tour, will probably, you know, give the trade some more chatter about yield potential. And whether or not USDA numbers are in line or if they're likely to kind of come down from where they were in August. It's been really interesting hearing the discussion on the August corn yield. I think that corn yield has stirred up more interest or more controversy than that August yield has in a long time. So I think I'm kind of anxious to hear what the Farm Journal tour kind of tells us, whether or not that verifies that yield or not.
And as you know, we always try to keep track of that here at WILLAG.org and on the air. However, next week, and I'm really kind of disappointed for a couple of reasons. One, I'd like to be around for the Farm Journal content so that I can collect it and get it on the air. And two, because I really wanted to go Monday into Southern Illinois to see the eclipse. However, I'm on jury duty. So this is what that means next week, is that certainly on Monday I will not be in, because there will be training for the jurist on Monday, and there's no way that I'll be back to do content for Monday. So we won't have anything there other than put a program together. And then each day after that, you never know whether you're going to be called in or not. So it'll be hit and miss, I suppose, all week. The last time around, of course, I didn't get called for jury duty. We'll see what happens this time.
Yeah, from what I hear, you're probably better off missing that solar eclipse down in Southern Illinois. They'll have traffic jams. I bet you 57 and 13 will be jammed up. You'll think you're in Dallas, Texas, I think.
You know, the 4-H is doing something interesting in the state. So, and you can search this out. I don't have it off the top of my head. Maybe I can find it. But they're gathering for hopefully what they believe will be a Guinness record. Most 4-H'ers in a baseball stadium to view a full eclipse. If you want to go down and gather up in the baseball stadium and pay, I think it's $8 to get in, you get your ticket, so you can head down for that. Look for University of Illinois Extension, and then Eclipse in Google probably will bring that up. So it's open, everybody can come down, but especially if you've got a 4-H'er, you can do that. So that'll be kind of interesting. But again, I'm disappointed that I can't be there, because, well, it's a full eclipse. You know, Dan, for those who are long-term listeners, who really liked to used to go to see those, actually would make his plan to do that, was Peter Levitt. He was a meteorologist that was on Thursday afternoons, and he would travel all over the planet. I remember him calling me and saying, I'm going to Egypt to see the full eclipse of the sun. He went into China, I know, and he would lead trips of people to do so, that sort of thing. So it can be a lot of fun, I suppose, and it's an event that doesn't happen all that often. So it's pretty neat to see that it's here.
In some, And sometimes these events do have impacts on the market, so maybe we'll keep our fingers crossed that maybe it'll turn the commodity market bullish.
Well, we'll see whether that happens too. All right. Hey, anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, none other than, you know, I think the market, you know, we're just arguing about yield now, and we're going to hear a lot of yield data next week from the Farm Journal Journal.
Yep.
I talked to a few farmers that said this. Actually, some beans could start getting combined in southern Illinois next week or two. So we're going to start hearing some yields here and there. They're going to start splattering out, and we'll see how the market responds to that.
We'll talk with you again next Thursday, hopefully.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Up next, something that I find to be extraordinary and very ordinary all at the same time. On Tuesday, I was over in Springfield at the sale of Champions. And while I was waiting, I was checking out the livestock and other products that would be up on the auction block. The meat pen for the rabbits, there are three of them in a pen, belong to Dax Gentis. He's from El Paso. I decided to talk to him for just a bit and see what this young man had to say about these meat pens. He's clearly not very old, but that's not all that unusual for 4-H'ers. They start to show at about age 8. His story with his rabbits was extraordinary, but also ordinary. Extraordinary, I think, because most people won't recognize the story he tells, other than if you happen to grow up on the farm or you were in 4-H, either one, and that doesn't really matter whether you were on the farm or not in that case, just that you were in a 4-H chapter, where each of these young men and women, from the time they're 8 years of age, get to stand up in front of the chapter and talk about their project. That's right. One of the things they do in 4-H is get up in front of the class, basically, and make a presentation. And they're young. They're young when they start. And I had that kind of conversation with Dax. I thought you might like to listen to it, because it's extraordinary and ordinary, all in one fell swoop. There's a lot of background noise, but you'll get the idea.
Okay, Dax, where are you from?
El Paso, Illinois.
And how long have you been raising rabbits?
1 year. This is the This is the first year of, like, working with them a little more.
Right. So how did you decide that rabbits were the thing that were going to be your 4-H project?
Well, this year we decided not to show pigs. So then we moved to rabbits with my grandpa. And my grandpa does most of the rabbits, and then me and my brother went over there with him a couple of days, and we decided to help him water the rabbits and feed the rabbits. And then I started the 4-H fair, and then we moved to the state fair and showed me and my brother did.
Nice. How'd you pick out which rabbits you're gonna bring? I mean, what are the things, if I remember correctly, they kind of have to be the same. So tell me about the rabbits themselves, right?
Well, we brought 3 meat pens. My brother actually got the best 2 meat pens, and I got the one that wasn't supposed to win, and his wraps were mine, and mine were in the back cage, and my grandpa went up to the judge and asked if he wanted to move them from the back cage up to the judging table, and the judge said no, they're back there for a reason, and my grandpa came to me and told me that mine probably have a chance of winning it all, and then I was just standing by my rabbits, and I came to the final 2, and he walked over to me, and he said mine, and then it went to the champion ones, the grand champion, and mine, these ones won it by far. The judge, right when we put all the rabbits, he walked over to me and said I was the champion.
Cool. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions about the rabbits you may or may not know. Don't worry. What's the breed or what kind type of rabbit
California.
California. California. And how much do they weigh?
One weighed 412, one weighed 414, one weighed 5.
And when you look look at them, how do you know whether they're a good meat rabbit or not?
Well, for meat pins, you want them to weigh similar in weight, and you don't really want to tell the difference in them. You want to look at the whole cage and not know the difference. You don't want to look at one and be like, oh, this one stands out. It doesn't look like the other two. You want them all. You can't tell the difference. You want to be able to pick one out and say those two look identical to this one.
So. Anyways, I didn't ask. How old are you?
I'm 12.
All right. Thank you, sir.
That was Dax Gentis. His trio of rabbits sold in the meat pen for $3,000 at the Illinois State Fair Sale of Champions in Springfield this past Tuesday. I say it's extraordinary, ordinary agriculture. Let's take a look now at the cash grain situation. Matt Bennett is here. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, how did the crops in your area look today?
Oh, I'd say they look okay. You know, we really didn't get a whole lot of that rain. We were supposed to have an 80% chance of rain and some decent totals, similar to a lot of folks. You know, it was a little bit disappointing, but we did get some rain, so any rain's a good rain, but... Yeah, I think that for the most part, the beans look really good. They could use one more soak and rain, and I think we'd have some fairly healthy yields. Whenever you look at the corn, it's just hit and miss. Wherever you got the rain, it's going to be awfully good corn. Where you didn't get the rain, you know, it's going to be pretty common corn.
You'll be on the Farm Journal crop tour next week. Have you been out and about very much in the last week and a half to see what crops look like?
Yeah, actually, this week I've been in Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota, so I'm going right back up there. But I was up there, and, you know, whenever you get out of, like, maybe the eastern third of both the Dakotas, it gets pretty rough. There's some pretty tough-looking crops. I think that they got enough rain early enough that it's going to be really good on the beans. Some of the corn's not going to be so hot. You know, whenever you get into Minnesota, a lot of parts of Minnesota are in really good shape. I think that southwest corner, there's some folks that are saying that it's maybe not quite as good as what they were hoping for. But I was in basically the west central part of Minnesota, and they had awfully good looking crops in there. It's definitely not going to be a record from what they're saying, but they're going to have a good crop.
And you'll be on the western leg, I take it, of the Farm Journal tour then?
Yes, we'll be starting out in Sioux Falls and then Grand Island, Nebraska City, Spencer, and Iowa, and then of course up to Rochester.
Tell me about corn and soybeans and pricing situation at this time, especially for old crop corn for producers who have left in the bin or someplace else that they need to market.
Right. You know, the bad thing about it, old crop corn is just corn. We're pretty much out of a situation where there's really a whole lot of difference. And the unfortunate thing, you know, the processor definitely knows those bushels are there. It's going to be really, you're just not going to get any sort of a push for the most part. And so whenever you look at trying to move bushels, guys are going to need the bin space. We know that a lot of elevators are actually sitting on a fair amount of old corn, so I don't really look for bases to get a whole lot better. But if you need the room, by all means, the guy's about going to have to close his eyes and roll with it. There is carry in the market. Market's trying to tell us we need to carry this corn and to hold on to it, and we'll get rewarded. But the unfortunate thing is the reality for a lot of folks, they're going to have to move it. So, you know, you look at the bean market today, it gives you a little bit of hope. Based upon weather, but by all means, the bean market's been beat up pretty bad lately, and I think that a person needs to look really close at what this price means at the yields they're looking at, because some folks are telling me they think they're going to have awfully good yielding beans, so maybe we need to be looking at price a little closer, even though it's gotten hurt pretty bad lately.
That'd be a tall order for people to pull the trigger, I would think, on that.
Absolutely, you know, but I think that whenever it boils right down to it, the bean market's also telling you need to carry, but, you know, everybody's got cash needs. So at some point in here, you know, if you know that you've got a bean yield above and beyond your APH significantly, which a lot of folks have told me they feel comfortable with that in certain areas, then it's probably the thing that you might want to move.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Matt Bennett, of course, is with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. We're joined now by Mike Tenurum. He's T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd. Always great to be here.
I want to talk about not the weather today to begin with, but something that's been rumbling through the system and starting to bubble up based on the cool weather we did have, many are thinking that that might correlate with some kind of early cold snaps in September that could be damaging to the crop in the United States. Is there any indication that that could actually be the case?
Well, I think the data actually tells a different story. There's been three major freeze events in the last 40 years or so. One of those was in September of 1974. The other was in September of 1983. And the last one was in September of 1995. Now, for those who are astute with the different weather scenarios that happened in each of those years, you might remember that in August of 1983 and August of 1995, it was incredibly hot. Those two summers ranked among the top five of the warmest in the last 123 years in the Corn Belt. So Augusts preceding these major freezes in September were actually very warm in 1983 and 1995. So it would have taken some real guts to sit there in August of 83 or 95 and start telling everybody that you thought a big freeze was coming later in September when it was sitting in the hundreds at that time of the year. So this year we're kind of dealing with the opposite situation where it's been very cool. Now, this is going to go down as one of the coolest Augusts on record, most likely ranking between number 10 and number 20 coolest going all the way back to 1895. September of 1974 was also preceded by a similarly cool August. But you can't draw a correlation between a freeze in September and August temperatures when we had two real hot scenarios and one real cool scenario leading into the freeze events that occurred in those Septembers. So we would classify those freezes as having been random events, and we don't believe there's any real clue out there today that tells us that we can start worrying about a frost come mid-September, because we've had three big ones in the last 40 years or so, and they were preceded by totally different weather in the prior month of August. In this August, although similar to 1974, totally different than what happened in 83 and 95. And you could even take the opposite conclusion and say that if it got real hot in August, maybe that would mean a freeze is coming. That's a bold statement. We don't really want to make bold statements at this time.
Then turn your attention to something a little closer at hand. There are some places across the Corn Belt, some actually pretty large geographic areas that could use some rain. What do we know?
Well, Iowa and northern Missouri and points east, essentially along to south of Interstate 80, could still use more rain. We did see a little more rain this afternoon in parts of Indiana and Ohio. Still raining now in Ohio, but we still need more. There are a couple of chances come Friday and Saturday, so only 24 to 48 hours from now, but the better chance holds until Monday and Tuesday. We really would like to see those rain chances materialize, because after that we can see it's most likely going to turn cooler and then turn a little bit drier. So we have another good chance for rain Monday and Tuesday. That's probably the event to focus on, Todd, because if that didn't materialize, then we know August would have been very dry for a lot of these different areas. Keep in mind, though, we did see a lot of rain over the last 2 days, especially in Nebraska. Nebraska now looking at one of their wettest Augusts on record because of all the rain a couple of days ago.
Thanks much, Mike.
You're welcome.
That, of course, Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.